The Bears are playing this huge playoff game against the blood rival on a Saturday night in their own building.
Mm-hmm.
First home playoff game since the double doink. It's not like they get home playoff games every other year.
Right.
Still happens much more frequently than the Jets, but nevertheless, it's a special event. So here the Bears are playing the Green Bay Packers in the midst of an epic comeback, which I don't know if anybody saw coming. In the midst of this, news breaks that their baseball team, their most popular baseball team, the Chicago Cubs, are stunningly signing Alex Bregman to a 5-year contract.
Right.
What would we do in a situation like that? Like, the Jets are playing a playoff game, and Kyle Tucker signs with the Mets.
Right. I think you still have time to process the Bregman thing, because it's not urgent. I mean, it's a big deal, but it's not urgent.
Right. You're not doing anything other than just enjoying the shock of it.
You're not seeing him in a Cubs uniform. You're not seeing anything for a while. So there's still time to process. And because the Bears won, that's going to be the story.
It became an epic night.
100%.
I mean, because at the time...
Now, but it's like an afterthought epicness. It's kind of like, oh, yeah. We also signed Alex Bregman.
Yeah. I mean, I look, the Jets specifically, whatever the Mets did, and you know how much I love the Mets, it would be an afterthought because it would be so unique that the Jets are actually playing a home playoff game and pulling off an epic... It would basically be like the Jets coming back on the Patriots.
But it's been that way for the Bears for a long time.
In what aspect?
Having a playoff game.
Well, they haven't had a home playoff game since the double doink. What year was that? 2018? 2017? Something of that nature?
Right.
So it's been a while.
But it's even rare with that one.
It's rare for the Jets. No, we win.
No, without a doubt. You guys don't make the playoffs, period. So
we don't make the playoffs, let alone a home playoff game. The closest example I could come up with was the infamous Mikal Bridges trade in the midst of Mets-Yankees. Mm. But it's a June baseball game. You know what I mean?
See, this is the problem with problem with Major League Baseball's in their offseason. It's so long and random.
Yeah, it can happen on a Saturday night during a Bear Packer game.
Right. Seriously. Not midweek, not on a, you know, Monday morning or whatever. Actually, more importantly, because it's football season, a Wednesday morning.
Right.
It happens in the middle of the biggest game in Chicago in a long time. And I guess you care. But I can't imagine most people cared, especially given how that game was going.
Yeah, I would have major mental confusion. Like, that's basically my reaction would have been like, I would have been so mentally confused if I was sitting at MetLife Stadium and all of a sudden, like, the Mets made a massive, what I would call shocking move.
Right. Don't they have control over when they release that?
No, because it's leaked to a reporter. I mean, think about it. It's not like the Cubs announced it. It just got leaked out by Jeff Passan.
Evan, this is where I think that you are such a psychopath.
Yeah.
I don't think there was a soul in Chicago that literally cared more than 3 seconds about Bregman in that moment at that time.
I don't know about
After the game.
Fine. Right. I don't know about a soul from Chicago, but I have a soul from Boston. Because remember, there was a losing end to this, and that is the Boston Red Sox lost Alex Bregman. Listen to this reaction from Hogdale of Barstool. He's a big Red Sox fan and was watching the game live because Barstool does a lot of those live watches, and there were Bear fans, and there's Hogdale with his Tom Brady jersey, and he's a Red Sox fan. So when you say maybe you don't register it in the moment, here was Hogdale's response to the Red Sox losing Alex Bregman.
You're pathetic! And now we sit here like, okay, well, like an idiot. Oh, I guess we'll go beside Paul Bichette. It sounds like such a cope. It's a feeble, pathetic cope. None of us believe they're going to sign Bo Bichette right now. What, they're going to overextend themselves when Dave Dombrowski's in the market for him? I'll believe when you actually do it. Worthless group of losers. You're a worse team than you were last year. If the offseason ended right now, it's a F. Fix it. You suck. See ya.
Now I needed this to happen during the Patriots playoff game.
You know what I'm wondering, Sean? You may be right. When it's good news, it's easier to say,
yes.
Great, I'll think about it later.
Right.
If it's bad news,
you can't help but react.
Maybe it does sink into the game you're watching. Like, I don't think Cody Bellinger is a good equivalent because you only had him for a year. So I don't know if like losing Bellinger in the middle of a giant playoff game would affect you. But let me ask you this. If you lost Aaron Judge in the middle of a giant playoff game, and that, I guess, technically could have happened.
That's a big deal.
That was the same offseason, but Judge obviously did it quickly.
But this isn't the same because Bregman's not mean, how long?
He's not. No.
It's not as emotionally attached.
No, this would have been like last night if that's when the Devers trade happened at, 6-3 Patriots Chargers last night.
But I'm
a homegrown guy.
But I'm asking you because it's not equivalent.
Yeah.
If you lost Aaron Judge in the middle of Giants Vikings,
oh, you'd shift to baseball. 100%.
Yeah, I think I'd look down, I'd mumble a bunch of pissed offness, and then like a random conversation would happen about it again in my head in the third quarter, and then I'd be fully engulfed in it the moment the game ended. Like, you'd have to, like, you'd be going back and forth with folders in your brain. It would be distracting, though, definitely.
All right, let's get back to your calls. 888-808-1019, the number. Dan is in New Jersey. Hey, Dan.
What up, Dan?
Hey, how are you? I appreciate you taking my call, Evan and Tiki. Tiki, longtime fan. Love you, man.
Thank you, brother.
I was just calling in about the Jags and Bills game. First quarter, 4th and 2, Jags go for it, barely missed it, but you lose the game by 3. This happens in the NFL a lot lately.
Yes.
I don't know what it is, whether Patrick Mahomes and the Kansas City always going for it, now other teams. If you look at Dan Campbell, the Lions record, they had a killing season, and they didn't make the playoffs because they're constantly going for it on 4th down instead of taking the points. And, I noticed a lot of teams are doing that.
Oh,
also,
yeah.
Bill Belichick used to always be, we're going for the points, we're going for the points, we're going for the points. And he always had a successful season,
Let's go to that specific one, because you're right. In general, the going for it on 4th down is through the roof specifically. If you go back to the Ben Johnson game,
yeah,
the Chicago game, because
yeah,
Ben Johnson was constantly going for it on 4th down. We even saw it in the Carolina game, and I thought it set a terrible tone
mm-hmm.
for the Carolina Ram game when immediately they were going for it,
right.
And it basically helped the Rams take an early 14-0 lead. But the play you're talking about is an interesting one, because Liam Cohen was asked about it after the game, which is, do you have any regrets about going for it on 4th and 2 from the 9-yard line instead of taking the points? And Liam Cohen would, like, before the reporter was done asking the question, was like, no.
Mm.
And his answer was a good one, which is, this is what we've done all year.
Yeah, but...
And he's not wrong. Like, he's been aggressive all year.
All year is regular season, not an elimination game. I'm going home. So this play happened. It was 11 minutes left in the second quarter.
And it was 7-3 Jacksonville.
Jags had a 7-3 lead.
Yep.
And if they just kick the field goal, it's 10-3.
Yep.
And so I get why this is, it could bring consternation to a Jag fan, because why are you so rushed to score points right now? Just get the guaranteed points. You've handled the Bills so far for the first quarter and some change. Why are you so worried that you're going to need to score points upon points upon points this early? And so I would have kicked the field goal, because 2nd and 2 is not, it's not 2nd and 1. You know what I mean? It's not like 4th and 1 or 4th and inches. There's a lot of yardage you have to try to pick up
here. And remember what they did. They ran an option with Trevor Lawrence. They called it as if he got it on the field, and then McDermott threw the challenge flag,
yep,
and it was overturned because his knee was down as like slightly before the first down marker. So it was close.
Right.
But they ran with Trevor Lawrence on the previous play on 3rd and 12. They ran with Trevor Lawrence, and
yeah,
he came up just a few yards short.
That was a scramble.
This
right.
one, I think, was a tush push.
No,
it was a design run.
No. It was a zone read. So he faked it inside. He
the 4th down play.
The 4th down, and he
yep.
came back around the edge. The DN was gone. It was a great play because the guard was supposed to get up and block the linebacker. He didn't get through, and so Trevor Lawrence is one-on-one with the linebacker, and he just kind of like, oh, crap, and he slips
yep.
and falls short by a half a yard or whatever it was. And, those type of moments only matter when the result is the other team going and scoring a touchdown. Now, they had 90 yards to go.
92 yards they went.
But guess what happened?
They scored a touchdown.
The Buffalo Bills go and score a touchdown. So instead of being potentially 10-10, you're now 10-7.
There are two things that made this worse. You hit on one of them. So when you fail on a 4th and 2 from the 9-yard line, the positive is, all right, you're making your opponent go 90-plus yards.
Yes.
Negative number one is that Josh Allen made it very easy to go 98 yards.
Yes.
He did it very easily. They faced 1/3 down during their march down the field. But you know what also made it worse? And this is like air out of balloon if you're a fan. You tell me if it's air out of balloon if you're mm-hmm. a player. Jacksonville got the football in that possession because Ray Davis fumbled the kickoff return.
Right.
So Jacksonville.
They were pulling blank.
Yeah. Jacksonville scored a touchdown and go up 7-3. Great. Buffalo fumbles the kick return. And we're talking about Ray Davis, who's had a tremendous season. And so the Jaguars are set up at the Buffalo 35. At minimum, you got to end up with 3 points. That's, so I thought the other kill was you get this unbelievable possession, like a gift from the gods, and you turn it into zero.
Can't happen.
So that's my other coaching mantra. If you steal a possession, get any points you can. A turnover is a stolen possession, especially when you're already in scoring position. Get whatever points you can get because treat it as if it doesn't count. It's free. I got some free points here. And so instead of taking the free points, Liam Cohen basically said, no, thanks. I don't need it.
Yeah.
That you're right. You reminded me because it was a turnover before. I kind of forgot. When you get a turnover, just score points, man.
It makes it even more of a reason to just take the points.
100%.
Because you cannot have an empty possession when you had a gifted possession based on a fumble from a Pro Bowl special teams player. Let's go to Vito in Wantagh. What's up, Vito?
Hey, guys. Thanks for taking the call. So, Evan, I'm with you 100%. Watching those games yesterday as a Jet fan, I mean, it's pathetic to see how bad we are. So I'm thinking, how do we get Mendoza? How do we get up to number one? before you guys laugh at me, hear me out.
Yeah.
I'm seeing online that the Raiders are heavily scouting offensive linemen, that they're quote-unquote not married to Mendoza.
Mm-hmm.
So how about the Jets offer the second pick, the Raiders' choice of Membu or Fashanu for the first pick, and the Jets' 16th pick?
Wow.
Jets get Mendoza at one. Raiders get their choice of their top offensive lineman at two. Now they rebuilt their offensive line, and they can use a 16th pick, let's say, on Simpson or somebody who's still out there.
So we're going
feasible, not feasible. What do you think?
Well, I don't think there's any precedent to that.
It's Well, you're giving up basically three first round picks.
Yes,
you're giving up the pick swap of one and two,
mm-hmm.
and then you're giving up number 16. And I would consider Olu Fashanu as an extra first round pick.
Yes,
if you're trading any of your first-round tackles that you drafted the last 2 years, it's like a surplus of first-round picks.
Yeah.
Would I be willing to do it? I would for a franchise quarterback. But I heard something this morning that, to me, has ended all fantasy of the Jets getting Fernando Mendoza. This has ended all fantasy that this could happen. I'm going to play you a clip. This is from the Heisman Show podcast. Fernando Mendoza was a guest and was asked the most cliche question known to man. Who from the past or the present would you want to have as a dinner guest? Now, Mendoza was very carefully said, look, I don't want to do the past. So let me just make, because I'll forget somebody, mm-hmm. it'll offend somebody. Let me just pick somebody from the present. Fernando Mendoza's answer is a death sentence for New York Jets fans. Ladies and gentlemen, here's Mendoza's answer to the one dinner guest from current time that he would love to have. Okay.
We have breaking. I would say my dream dinner guest is Tom Brady. He's someone that I've looked up to my entire life, and I really not only love his play on the field, but his resilience and the way that he's conducted himself throughout his career. I was actually born in Boston, lived there 1 year for my dad when he was in medical residency up there, and he's been a special role model for myself and a special, you know, idol. My role model and my idol is my dad and my mom, and I love them to death. However, football role model to follow is always Tom Brady, as he's had such a resilience. And that's a thing that I think the Hoosiers have shown great this season. Whether it's Iowa, Oregon, or Penn State, resilience has always shown up. And that's something that I do attribute to watching Tom Brady growing up.
Yeah, with Dad. I mean, he's just told you the owner of the team picking number one is his dream dinner guest. It's over. It's done. Fernando Mendoza's a Raider.
But if you're a really good quarterback on any team, you're going to see Brady more than you would if you were the Raiders quarterback.
That's a good point.
That's a great point.
Because Brady will be calling games. Or maybe Fernando Mendoza, let me ask you this.
Yeah.
Is just brilliant.
He's playing the game.
If the New York Jets had the first overall pick, would he not say, you know, I started my career playing defensive back and I loved Aaron Glenn. He was amazing for the Jets. I mean, my dad took me to New York for one, again, completely false story. Took me to New York one weekend. I said, hey, I want to go to a football game. We went to a Jets game. Aaron Glenn had two interceptions, and I was infatuated with him ever since. And now he's the head coach of the New York Jets, and New York is the place to be. If you can make it there, you can make it anywhere. I would love to sit down in Per Se or some Le Bernardin, some great restaurant in New York City and have dinner with Aaron Glenn.
What if he said that? It would be so over the top. It's such an obvious lie. Like, saying Tom Brady is your dinner guest is like, oh, it makes sense. His best route, if he wanted to kiss the Jets' ass, would, believe it or not, be Joe Namath. It would be, yeah, you know, my dad taught me football as a kid, and the story, I just can't get over is how no one thought the Jets could beat the Baltimore Colts.
But there's no belief. There's no belief that that's real.
Dude, he's an old soul, that Fernando Mendoza.
Yeah, he is. He is.
I mean, Fernando Mendoza saying Tom Brady, though, is a death sentence. And by the way, I'll give you breaking news off of your glass break, and it does involve the Jet quarterback situation. What's the kid's name from Nebraska?
All right, Dylan Raiola, the kid that looks like Patrick Mahomes, and everybody thinks is Patrick Mahomes, but he doesn't play like Patrick Mahomes.
Yes.
He is transferred to Oregon this morning.
And that would make you think he knows that Dante Moore is indeed coming out of school despite what was a brutal effort in the national semifinal. So Dante Moore being in the draft, and I'll remind this for Jet fans, whether the Jets take him or not, or you want him or not, is a good thing. You want options. You want the possibility of trading back if someone else likes Dante Moore more than you, or maybe you take Dante Moore. So whether you like him or you don't like him, it is a good thing for Dante Moore to be in this draft, and this is at least an indicator, I would certainly take it as an indicator, that the belief is he is going to come out of school.
Yeah, and you never know. There could be deep down the Raiders preferring Dante Moore. Don't tell the Jets that, and then that Kohler's wish of trading up, then that presents that possibility.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean,
you don't know if the Raiders can get more too and get more capital?
But you know, that's a fantasy.
Yeah, that's not happening.
I mean, come on. That's certainly not happening. The other piece of news that's more negative towards the New York Jets is that Trinidad Chambliss, and you may remember this on Friday, it was rejected by the NCAA, him looking for another year of eligibility.
6 year of eligibility, because he was 4 years at Ferris and then 1 year at Ole Miss.
And I brought up to you guys, is there a chance he appeals this? I don't know how the process works. Well, according to Pete Thamel of ESPN, Trinidad Chambliss is actually hiring a prominent Mississippi law firm, with ties to Ole Miss, and they are going to file suit in the state of Mississippi against the NCAA. They are filing a complaint later this week with an effort to secure both a preliminary and permanent injunction.
Wait, so what's the reasoning?
To get another year of eligibility.
I know, but what grounds?
Lawyer,
he's played
Tom,
5 years of football. was he aggrieved because he went to a little tiny school and... It doesn't make sense.
The NCAA issued a statement denying a sixth season. The NCAA concluded the insufficient medical documentation provided to support the request. So he
applied for medical, meaning one of those 4 years that he was at Ferris, he didn't play because he was hurt.
And you know what this headline can be? The headline of Trinidad Chambliss is going to sue the NCAA to get another year of eligibility.
Mm-hmm.
The headline is going to be, young quarterback sues so that he isn't drafted by the New York Jets.
Yeah.
I mean, that's the way it's going to sound.
That's exactly what it's going to sound like. But if he makes it clear that he doesn't want to be a Jet, you don't think the Jets are going to draft him.
No, you have to draft. You have to draft the talent.
Really?
Yes. Yeah. I don't think you give in. I think the Eli Manning case and the John Elway case.
It's a different era, too.
It's a different era, and it was very, very unique. Let's go to Mitchell in Queens. Hey, Mitchell.
Hey, guys. How are you? Good morning. So, Evan, I don't know... on your list of who to root for, not root for. For me, it's got to Ben Johnson. You cannot root for him. I mean, the guy is so disrespectful. He is so hard to like. Before he comes in and says anything, he's just dissing everyone in the division. I'm just curious, just you guys from a standing back standpoint, like, does Ben Johnson turn you off?
Yes, he's turned me off from the beginning, but my bias was the arrogance of rejecting even an interview with the New York Jets. But you're right. Like, since his opening press conference, when he said, I just love beating LaFleur twice a year, he comes across very douchey. Now, to his credit, he's done a wonderful job. He's had a great first year. He's helped turn that franchise around. But yes, I find it really difficult to root for Ben Johnson. I can't be alone, Tico.
Well, I mean, I don't mind him because I know how good of a coach he is. And at the end of the day, if you're a good coach, you can get away with being a jerk. And he's a good coach.
It's not considered bragging if you can back it up.
That's 100% right.
Isn't that a Limp Bizkit song?
Right. What do you say? I enjoy beating. Did he beat every team in the division twice?
Did they sweep the division? I don't believe it.
Well, they didn't beat the Packers both times.
Yeah, now he did.
But they beat them the second time, third time.
He still got the two victories against LaFleur.
So I would assume they beat Minnesota both times.
But he never talked about
it doesn't matter. But
any of those guys, he spoke up specifically about LaFleur in his opening press conference, where he said he likes beating them twice.
They lost to the Vikings in week one.
Oh, okay.
They didn't beat Kevin O'Connell twice.
That was the only week J.J. McCarthy looked good.
The Chicago thing, or I'm sorry, the Ben Johnson LaFleur thing is very strange because there's no backstory. And we've all looked into it, like, what's the backstory? And there really isn't. Other than, I guess, him shooting towards the top, or maybe looking at another young, offensive-minded head coach and just saying, I want to beat him. And maybe it's a compliment to Green Bay because the Packers have had a lot of regular season success and certainly a lot of success over Chicago over the last 6 years. It's not a personal thing. It's just a random thing.
I agree. I don't think that that's a personal slight. I think it's just you're the Green Bay Packers. You're a historic franchise, and he wants to put the Bears back on the map by beating the best franchise in the division. And that's the Green Bay Packers.
Yes.
As much as we think it's the Detroit Lions, that's a recency bias thing. Historically, it's been the Green Bay Packers, going back all the way through Aaron Rodgers and through Brett Favre. If you're a head coach of the Bears and you're saying, I want this team to be great, the team you're talking about beating is the Packers.
Absolutely. It's a compliment.
Right. Exactly.
I think, and we did this on Friday, and our last caller referred to this, we put together a route chart, like the teams that we're rooting and we're ranking them, and it's all individual preference. Obviously, if you put money on a game, that will change who you're rooting for. But I can tell you right now, looking ahead to Chicago against Los Angeles, the Rams against the Bears, and it's amazing to say this because Matthew Stafford's won a championship. Sean McVay's been to two Super Bowls. Sean McVay is 57 times more likable than Ben Johnson is. So when you talk about, yes, I respect Ben, he's great at what he does. He is great at what he does. Sean McVay's great at what he does. And Sean McVay comes across like a good dude. So I know when I'm sitting there watching that game, what day is that game, Sean?
That is Sunday. Everybody's up in arms about that.
Yeah, because they're screwing everybody on time off, which is unfair.
Screwing the 49ers. Oh, well, we need the division.
Well, they're not the only ones getting screwed. A lot of teams are dealing. The rest could have been handled differently by the NFL, but we'll address that later. I'm rooting for Sean McVay. And it's not just because he's a ginger. Mm. I just think he's a more likable guy. You don't think he's a likable guy?
Is he really a ginger?
Yeah, he qualifies.
Does he?
Sean McVay, Thomas Jefferson.
Isn't he blonde?
Evan Roberts. What?
I thought he was blonde.
Blonde is a variation of gingerness.
No, come on.
You're stretching.
Stop it.
No, he's a ginger.
That is not true at all.
Sean McVay's a ginger.
He's not. Okay, now I got to look. And now I got to check to see if blonde is a version of ginger.
Well, no, it's like it's a variation, but he's genuinely
blonde?
A ginger.
Is he strawberry blonde?
Blake Griffin, too. The plan is they want to keep LaFleur, but they have to work out a contract with only 1 year left before his contract expires. And as I mentioned earlier, who knows what LaFleur wants? He very well could look at coaching free agency and say, I could get there. I could really force the Green Bay Packers' hands. But we'll see. We'll keep an eye on it over the next couple of days. And I do think now that Nick Sirianni appears safe, that Matt LaFleur appears safe, the Buffalo Bills won a playoff game, we will officially do our NFL head coach bingo game tomorrow, where we officially make our predictions on where all of these head coaches will end up. Because we were held off last week because of the possibility there'd be more vacancies. I think tomorrow we should be safe. Now, there's a big controversy going on, and I'm curious your opinion on it. As somebody who's stood there and done press conferences and has answered questions from media members, yesterday after the Jacksonville Jaguars lost their brutal game to the Buffalo Bills, Liam Cohen was not exactly asked a question, but this exchange occurred between him and a Jacksonville reporter.
How you doing today? Lynn Jones, Jacksonville Free Press News. I just want to tell you congratulations on your success, young man.
Thank you.
Hold your head up, all right? You guys have had a most magnificent season.
Thank you.
And you did a great job out there today.
Appreciate
so you just hold your head up, okay?
Thank you, ladies
and gentlemen, Duval, you the one, all
Thank
right?
You, ma'am.
You keep it going. We got another season, okay?
I appreciate
Take
it.
Take care and much continued success to you and the entire team.
Thank you, ma'am.
Now, my reaction is that was hilarious. There is a lot of controversy, specifically from reporters who are angry about this.
Why?
Saying, that's not what a reporter is supposed to do. You're supposed to ask a question. You can't be doing this. So what's your take on this?
Or it's a small town in a small market, and this reporter wanted Liam Cohen to know how her constituents felt. I don't have a problem with this. There's humanity. Why we got to be so hard-nosed all the time? Ask the hard-hitting question. I don't mind this at all. Not one bit.
How would you have responded to this?
I'd have said exactly what he said. Thank you, ma'am.
That's just it. Thank you.
Thank you, ma'am. I appreciate you. That's what you're supposed to say.
Yeah.
You knucklehead from north of the Mason-Dixon line don't know how to say thank you. You say, kiss my ass. You got a problem with this. This is what people in the South do. It just is what it is. Like, it's something you come to expect, accept, and if you got a problem with it, deal with it.
Yeah, I happen to be on your side because while I love hard-hitting questions and I love that moment that we played last week of Chris Russo saying to Mike Milbury, how do you still have a job?
Mm-hmm.
And the hard-hitting questions that Joe Shane faced, and I'm all for it.
Right.
I think this is okay once in a while.
Like
it's totally fine. It's funny.
She's right.
Yeah.
This team sucked last year and the year before because of the circumstances and the year before that because of the coaching stuff. And it's just, they've been in a bad spot for a long time. They won 13 games. I mean, I know Tony Romo said, this team is for real. Of course. They won 13 games, Tony. Of course they're for real. But it's just like, when the Jets get good,
mm-hmm.
when they win 13 games in a season.
I'd do this.
And lose in a playoff game. and Aaron Glenn is standing up there, and you happen to be there. You're going to be like, Aaron, I know it sucked to lose to the Buffalo Bills in the first round and in the wild card round. But, man, it felt awesome. Thank you.
You know what it would be? And I bet you he would do it. Maybe not after a loss, because losses are very difficult.
Right.
Maybe after the completion of a regular season. I could see Joe B going to that press conference. Let me just tell you this, bro.
Mm-hmm.
This team's been a freaking disaster for 20 years.
Yes.
You got us out of the abyss. I got to thank you, bro. Now you better get it done next year. I'm not going to be back here next year celebrating. But that I could see. That would be our equivalent of, I forgot, she said her name at the beginning. I think Lynn Jones was her name.
Yep.
Yeah.
Our Lynn Jones equivalent in New York would be Joe thanking a Jet head coach for making the playoffs and then ending it with the dire warning of, you better win next year.
It'd be the best question at the press conference.
Joe really did that. I'm surprised how many people got sensitive about it, because I've seen like reporters all over social media like deeply bothered and offended by, that's not a reporter. That's not what a reporter should do.
My biggest argument I've seen a lot of reporters push back in is, we all have deadlines, this waste time. That was 30 seconds. I mean, are we serious that was like a big time waster? I don't know, man. Somebody is nice for once and we're going to get all over it. I don't understand the issue.
Yeah, as long as you're also being pushed for the tough questions.
Like, right. That couldn't be the whole press conference. You can have 10 people telling you good job, good season.
So
right.
What I tried to do with all of these games this weekend, because you never know what you'll find, is I listen to every post-game press conference. Mm. And I listen to Liam Cohen's. Well,
good for you.
Thank you. And that's why I quoted earlier, he was pushed on the going forward on 4th-and-2 from the 9 instead of kicking the field goal. And again, he was pushed on it. It's not like Liam Cohen walked in and everyone was like, oh, let's give you a back massage. Right. You're amazing. Like, he was legitimately pushed on that decision. And so is the media as rough as it is in New York? No one's suggesting that. But as long as all the questions are being asked, it's not a big deal.
Mm-hmm.
If this one woman just said, hey, I want to put you over because this opinion represents a good amount of Duval. We were happy. We love you. Thank you. And I also found it entertaining. This is the third time I've listened to it. It makes me laugh every time.
Of course. It's so polite.
Yeah. And like, it almost felt like Liam.
It's so unexpected, actually.
Very unexpected.
Which is why I think it's even more awesome.
I think one of these New York reporters has to do it to a local coach or manager this year.
And Liam Cohen kind of looking down and looking up, it kind of reminded you, your dog ever go on the carpet and then you're like, all right, you're a good boy, you're a good boy. That's what it felt like. Liam Cohen's eyes reminded me of the dog after that.
That's funny.
And here's the truth, even for Lynn, and even in a city like Jacksonville, you got your 1 year and you did a nice job. You better win.
Of course.
Like, eventually, it's not going to be like this.
Now there's an expectation that you win.
1,000%. And I think you look at the Jaguars roster, not just the quarterback, but pound for pound their roster, and you say, yeah, you better win.
Right.
And that doesn't mean win a championship next year, but it's a couple of rounds.
He's off to the right start because you are a rookie, first-time head coach. You go 13-4. It is so much better than the alternative, which is 4-13. It just feels so much better. And you're not racing to get to 500 for the rest of your career.
Right.
Right. So he's got a pretty big head start on how people are going to judge him based on his record. Because that's what we do. Ultimately, it always comes back to your record.
All the time, man. 888-808-1019. Chris up in Michigan. Hey, Chris.
Evan, Tiki, you guys, great show. Sean, I want to tell you something. Even though sometimes you hit the wrong buttons, you keep your head up. You're having a most magnificent show. Thank you.
Thank you, young man. Thank you.
All right. So I originally called about the Bregman signing during the game, but I wanted to touch on a few things. Like, first of all, Chambliss, I think it was his sophomore year over at Ferris State up here, Tiki, he did medical red shirt. So I think he does have a little bit of a gripe to be able to do that when other players do that quite a bit.
Yeah.
Especially jumping from Division II to Division I and stuff. And he wasn't even a great quarterback in high school. He's gotten so much better literally every year. I think it's kind of cool to see. But then I wanted to ask you, too, that very last play when Bishop got the interception in the Jaguars game, you think they could have called pass interference when the defender was hooking, I believe it was Jacoby Myers' hip right there?
Yeah.
Did you see it?
Yeah.
Do you think they could have called that?
You can, but they tend to get away with this in the postseason. Who was it? I can't remember now. He got beat early, the cornerback, and then he had an interception late. And later in the game, I'm forgetting his name now, but he was getting away with, this was in the Eagles game. He was getting away, Mitchell, he's getting away
with
Twitter.
Two interceptions in the game, too.
But he kept Quinyon getting Mitchell. Away.
Yep.
He kept getting away with pulling the receiver just slightly. And he would pull the very bottom back of his jersey. And that looks like nothing when you watch it, but it allows him to pull himself into coverage. You know what I mean? And so, should it have been called 100%, but they're not going to call that in a playoff game. So the answer is you're not getting that call.
I always, in
these moments.
I always err on the side of keep the flag in your pocket.
Yes.
And that's not always right. The case, because I think one of the most infamous missed calls maybe in NFL history is the non-pass interference in the New Orleans Saints-Los Angeles Rams
right.
game.
Right.
And so obviously that's your outlier. That's your egregious example. But 9 out of 10 times, I think most of us, I don't speak just for myself. I think I speak for a lot of people when I say err on the side of just don't throw the flag.
Right. Unless it's so obvious you can't not throw it.
Dave is in Rockville Center. Hey, Dave.
Hey, good morning, guys. Good to talk to you again.
Thanks.
What's up?
Evan, I'm going to direct this question towards Tiki because I don't think he'll hang up on me in 10 seconds. I want you to just let me set this up. I want to talk to you about McDermott's decision to not lead the clock down with a minute 6 left or a minute 4 left. Okay, let me set it up. So here's the context. The Jags have the longest kicking field goal kicker in NFL history.
That's right, 58, Cam Little.
The current NFL kickoff rules put a team in field goal range after like 2 or 3 chunk plays, or in that kicker's case, maybe 1 chunk play.
Right.
We know about the Kansas City Chiefs 13 seconds game that McDermott screwed up. You as an offense have 3 timeouts, 64 seconds, the defense has no timeouts, you're on the 6-inch line, and you got 4 down. What is wrong with taking a knee, let the clock go down to 25 seconds, 26 seconds, and either run your play or call a timeout? You got 3 downs to do it. You got 3 timeouts to do it. Why do these coaches prefer to hope that the other team doesn't score over taking the game? They want you to score, so there's a reason why they want you to score.
Yes.
So you're doing what they want.
Right.
3 downs in the 6-inch line, you have to take a knee there. I mean, top-level quarterbacks are in the playoffs. If you're facing a top-level quarterback, if you face Aaron Rodgers, Tom Brady, or Joe Burrow, or even the top quarterbacks that are in the playoffs now, if that interception hadn't happened,
well, look,
you're going to either get that game tied or you're going to lose it.
So here's the reality. And you set it up. You basically gave yourself the answer at the beginning. Cam Little has made a 68 yard field goal.
Also missed one earlier in the game.
Yeah, but that was shorter. He just kind of pulled it, right?
Okay.
It had nothing to do with the length. And so the Jacksonville Jaguars have three timeouts at this point. So if you go on a knee, they're calling a timeout, right?
No, they had just burned their final timeout.
They burned their final timeout.
Correct.
So all three plays prior.
They burned their three timeouts. That's what I meant. They burned their three timeouts.
They used their last timeout right after the review that had Allen down at the 1 yard line.
Yeah.
So there was a minute 5 to go. They just used their final timeout, and now Buffalo has a new set of downs at the 1 yard line.
And so Buffalo can either take a knee and let the clock run, and then you're going to let it run again. Mm-hmm. So you're losing a yard every single time you do this.
And you can, if you're Buffalo, milk it to the very end if you want.
Of course, but yes. You're losing a yard every time you do this. Now you're going to have to, on third down, I guess, try to score a touchdown after losing 2 yards. So now instead of being on the 6-inch line, it's on the 2.5-yard line.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Are you positive you're scoring from the 2.5-yard line? Because you have to score a touchdown.
Well, I think the
downside of not scoring is worse than the downside of having Trevor Lawrence go, in this case, 15 yards after the kickoff to get Cam Little in 70-yard field goal range.
I think you would do it once. So with a minute 5 to go, after Jacksonville uses their timeout, you would kneel one time.
Mm-hmm.
You'd kill the 40 seconds, which gets you down to about 25 seconds left in the game.
Okay.
And at that point on second down, you have to try to score.
Okay.
You've milked as much clock as you can.
So let me throw a hypothetical.
Yep.
Bad snap.
Yeah.
Or Josh does something. Something happens.
Well, I got the obvious one. And this is the biggest one to me.
False start.
No, that's it. A false freaking start, which is so easy to have happen.
100%.
And now instead of being at the 1, you're at the 6.
Right. And there's 24 seconds left, and you're now third down. Or second down, and you have to score a touchdown.
That's why, even with the idea of I'm only doing it one time, I'm milking the 40 seconds, the false start would scare the crap out of me. Right. And you can't tell me that that's a guarantee to not happen.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there are times on a football field in which everyone knows they're not snapping, and they're trying to draw you off sides, and you go off sides.
Right.
Yep. So there is no guarantee you're going to avoid the false start.
There are circumstances like that where the offense jumps off sides, and they know they're not snapping the ball. So
it's Evan's best argument. Spider crawls on the back of a left tackle, you screwed 5 yards.
That's right.
It's more so than the bad snap or the I can't get in at the one, because I get it. The odds are very, very low. The odds of a false start and pushing you back those 5 yards, it's high. It happens all the time.
Right.
So I get it. I see the other side. I think I started this show much earlier saying I don't see the other side. All right, fine. I see your other side.
Right, but at the end
score
of the day,
a touchdown.
They won the game.
Yeah.
So who cares?
Yeah, no, it's just one of those. You know why these arguments are good, even though it turned out to be irrelevant? Next Saturday or Sunday.
Mm-hmm.
The following Sunday.
Right.
Like, you have these arguments because you know it's going to happen again. And so you kind of go through it, you flesh through it, you give your sides on it. Because I'm telling you right now, there's going to be another playoff game in which there's going to be a debate of should you let them score or not. It's going to happen. Let's go to Richie in Queens. Hey, Rich.
Hey, guys, how are you?
Good.
Yeah, on that play, too, good point, because you don't know what's going to happen, and you can't assume that you're going to have this out again. And the other side is, I think they knew that the worst that can happen is they can tie us. You know, Teek, if I'm thinking they're only going to be up two, and this guy can win it, then we say, whoa, do we really want to give him the time? So
that's right.
At that point, and Ev, I heard that interview with Russo, with Milbury, when he says, welcome aboard, Mike, and how do you keep your job? I thought it's one of the funniest openings I've ever heard.
Oh, 100%. And that's why we used it recently, because Art Stapleton asked Joe Shane a much neutered down version of that, which is, how do you still have your job? So if you missed it, you can find it in the Evan and Tiki podcast. We took Chris's infamous, how do you still have a job, Mike? And placed it over the Joe Shane question. Let's go to Alone in New Jersey. What's up, Alone?
Hey guys, how are you?
What's up?
I used to be Jordan in New Jersey when you were at the afternoon hour, but my alias is now being lifted.
Fair enough.
That's great.
I wanted to see how you liked your afternoon midday. I would think that it would be the best one to have, because you could have breakfast at home. You could then be at home for dinner with your family. You could go to a sporting event that night. What are your thoughts on that?
Oh my God.
I mean,
what
it was
a question.
It was all good until opening day for the New York Mets got moved. It was all good.
But it would still be worse if I was on from 2 to 6:30.
True.
So you're asking which one's better.
It would be unavailable if you were on from 2 to 6:30, unless you skipped the show like you did 2 years ago.
I didn't
skip. Spike cussed you out.
I didn't skip the show. I missed 2 hours of a 4.5 hour show. That's the truth. That's the reality. People say I just missed it. I didn't miss the show. I missed 2 hours. And by the way, I was on for 15 minutes before Spike ran me off on the phone. So technically, I was on the show for 1 hour 45.
That's true.
I think that being able to be with the family in the afternoon and night is like the greatest thing in the world. So yes, I'm a big fan of these hours.
Yeah.
I knew that, though, when they moved me back in 2020. But it was one of those things where I'll make good. This afternoon thing will work out. Mm-hmm. And then you mentally get used to it because I did it for 6 years. But it took like an hour of the new time slot for me to remind myself how awesome it is.
Well, I get to take my daughter to school, and then I get to be an Uber driver with Tracy because it's all cheer practice for us. And so now I get to help.
You are right. Like, it is mostly being an Uber driver. Mm-hmm. Like, that's what being a parent is after the hours of 3:30, and certainly on Saturday. Like, I spent Saturday driving everywhere. I drove to a birthday party. Mm-hmm. I drove back to my house to pick someone at my other kid up. Then I drove to New York City for a piano recital. Then I drove to dinner, then to the recital, then to home. I said to my wife, I've been in the car for 13 hours.
Right. Yeah, my car has like 10,000 miles over my lease.
Of course.
And I'm not even joking.
I get it. Let's go to Dominic in New Rochelle. Hey, Dominic.
Gentlemen, what's up?
What's up?
One point and the other is a question from my guy, Tiki. First, on the 49ers. I don't think Shanahan gets enough credit on the job he has done this year with all the injuries.
No,
100%. Especially on defense.
100%.
He has a great record on the road, playoff wins. I think he's the best coach in the NFL as of now. He hired a great staff, especially Sal as a DC. That's a perfect example of a guy who just isn't a good head coach, but a great coordinator. And you got John Lynch, head of operations there. That's the ideal situation I would want for the Giants, to hire Harbaugh, get a well-known, really good DC in there. And here's the other, this is a question for Tiki. As a diehard Giants fan, Tiki, I don't want to bring this up, but what's the worst playoff? Talking about bad playoff losses, like the Packers.
Yeah.
What's worse playoff loss for you?
Well,
your rookie year against Minnesota or 0-2 49ers?
It's interesting because I could throw in my last one too against the Eagles, but just because it was my last game, and I felt like we could have and probably should have won that game, but the Eagles bested us, so that one hurt because it ended my career. But honestly, I didn't know anything from anything back in 1997 when we lost to the Minnesota Vikings. And that was Fossil's first season, and we won the division. We hosted a home game, and then all of a sudden, it was over. But I was also 22 years old, and in my mind, I'm saying, all right, this is fine. This is easy. It's easy to get to the postseason. I think the hardest one, and it's the 49ers lost, because we were really good that year. And we showed it because we were dominating the 49ers until we weren't. And I think we could have beat Tampa and whatever the NFC Championship game would have been. I think that was the one that I hate the most.
Now, Sean, as the Giant fan, would you agree with Tiki as the player who competed in these games assessment?
Yeah, 2002 was, to me, the worst loss of my lifetime. Period. Stop.
It was worse than the Packers loss. It was a big. We were beating them by more than the Packers were beating.
Yeah,
and
the Bears.
The Giants that year were the classic team that got hot at the right time. They went undefeated in December.
Yeah,
4-0, and that started
and dominated people.
Exactly.
Remember, we went to Indy at the end of the year and destroyed them.
It's almost. I want to say it's forgotten because I'm sure Giant fans will yell at me. It's not forgotten, but it feels like the Viking one he brought up is like so bad, but yet maybe the 0-2 one tempers it. You guys were up by 9 with like 2 minutes to go.
It's the onside kick.
And you
kick
lost on an onside kick.
Yeah. But the onside kick being botched is what everybody remembers.
Well, of course, because the only way you would have lost that game is not recovering an onside kick, and obviously that's what happened.
Who won that year?
In 97?
That would be the Denver Broncos against the...
Was that the Falcon year?
The Green Bay Packers.
Oh, Packers.
And was that their perfect season? I mean,
that was the first of their two Super Bowls.
No, Denver, you guys beat Denver the next year.
That was the perfect season.
Yeah.
98 was when they started perfect and they lost to us.
Yes.
But they didn't win the Super Bowl again.
Yeah. Denver was trying to win a back-to-back championship and they lost to the Green Bay Packers in 97. And then 98, Denver got there.
No, I'm sorry. I got that wrong.
You got it backwards.
I got it backwards. My apologies.
Green Bay was going back-to-back.
Green Bay was going, right, because Green Bay just beat New England.
Right.
Green Bay was trying to go back-to-back. Denver won, which I remember as a kid being excited about because an AFC team won a Super Bowl, which was very rare back then.
That's true.
Think about that run in the 90s.
Yeah.
And that was my lesson to football, right, like growing up in the early 90s.
Cowboys.
Well, the Bears are before my time. That was 85.
I'm just trying to think of all my era. It was like Cowboys, Bears.
Niners.
Niners, then Redskins.
Giants.
Giants.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's crazy.
That's true. I didn't realize how dominant the NFC was.
Well, the Bills losing four in a row really fluffed up it, too.
Well, that's true. The Broncos winning that Super Bowl, now that I'm remembering it, is the first time in my lifetime I ever saw an AFC team win. Because the NFC team won every freaking year before that. Like, I'm trying to remember the previous AFC winner prior to Denver doing it in 97. Because you had the Niners win, you had the Cowboys win, you had the Giants win, you had Washington win, you had the Niners win.
It's in the 80s.
87, no, was the Niners. 86 was the Giants. 85, holy crap! What was the Raiders?
I got to look
it. Was the 83 Raiders?
Yes, it was, because I remember that.
So let me get this straight, because now my brain is telling me this. So between 1983 and 1997, the NFC team won every single year.
That's incredible.
Are you on the computer fact checking on this?
I'm looking at it.
So 97, Green Bay, I'm going backwards now.
Yes.
Green Bay, Dallas, San Francisco, Dallas, Washington,
Giants,
Niners, 49ers, Washington, Giants, Chicago, Bears, 49ers,
Raiders.
84. That was the one. That was in my list of memorable games. Remember?
That's right.
Because that was the Marcus Allen going left and then right and about the middle of the field for 60-something yard touchdown. Yeah, the Raiders were the last one in 1984.
That's crazy. So for me, as like I was a teenager at the time, I was like, oh, finally an AFC team won. Yeah, for me, it was only about a 5-year sample size. For those that were older, it was a 13-year sample size of the same conference winning every single season. That's crazy.
Right.
That's crazy. All right.